Yo, what's up, everyone? I'm back here with Alice Lamb. Super excited. Coffee in a cocktail bar. Number two, missed last week because I was in Fredericton at the Congress, CHRA, talking about affordable housing and social housing. But very excited, Alice, for you to be here with me. I've told you this before. You're one of my favorite citizen extraordinaires. Oh, and so I am very honored for you to be here. It means a ton. I'm super stoked about all your initiatives. And I want to give you a ranting review, but you do so many things that I can't keep track. So I'm hoping, you know, give a bit of introduction, tell us a bit about yourself, your journey, how you got to kind of where you are and all the cool things you're doing.
Cool. I'll try to do Cold Note version. Born and raised in Calgary, Chinese. Parents were Vietnamese refugees and came here in the late 80s. We grew up in Marlborough and then moved to Valley Ridge and then Mission. And then now we live in Elbow Park. And so I've definitely seen all four quadrants of the city and lived in France for my master's, lived in New York, working for a consulting company, and then came back here in 2014 when I saw our mayor's plea for people to, you know, come back and like help build the city after the Great Flood, right? And so that's what I wanted to do. Came back, started volunteering, learning about the neighborhood, saw that there was a lot of inequity and a lot of things that could be done in like a more innovative fashion. And so started getting to work and meeting lots of great people. Studied not urban planning as my major in university, but definitely studied like Round Square when you guys were like just starting out and thought it was such a cool company. So it's definitely like younger me is like dying right now being like, oh my God, I'm talking to Al. That's so sick.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we've started a lot of different nonprofits like Tinder for volunteering with Volley. And then we started Good Neighbor, which is Canada's first pay what you want thrift store. We started Tiger's Den Pop-Up Market, which is like a collective of artists. Moonlight and Dragon City Mall, which has over 100 Asian artisanal vendors that are local to Calgary, all young girls. So like building up that sector. And then in my day job, I work in commercial real estate. So I work a lot with small businesses, mom and pops all throughout the city. And then, yeah, it's just been a great, it's been a great experience. It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, crazy. So lots to unpack there. So you went to school for what exactly? Correct.
So my bachelor was in econ with a minor in East Asian studies. But towards the last year of my degree, I did a ton of human geography courses. So that's kind of like what U of A calls urban planning. Cool. And so learned a lot about city building in the Edmonton context, which has a lot to do with affordable housing and like inequity as well. So yeah.
Cool. And so like I obviously try to follow everything you just said, but also a lot of the initiatives that you are working on. And what really always used to strike me is like how you're able to juggle so many of these kind of things. And I was always fascinated by how you were able to actually get on the front line and meet with people and understand their needs. So talk to me a bit about like even Good Neighbor, like how that came to fruition. What are some of the things that you're seeing with some of the customers? And like incredible. And I just want everyone to know what that is and how it works.
Yeah. So Good Neighbor started as a project a year after we started the Calgary Community Fridge. So during the pandemic, everybody was home. People lost their jobs. No one could afford like groceries. And we decided to create Calgary's like first most like more like well-known outdoor fridge pantry situation. And people kept leaving their clothes there. And I just kind of put it into the universe like, hey, if we can get an indoor space eventually, we'd love to have like clothing and food in one place. Create like a retail shopping experience that's cool, friendly, like unique to address some of the poverty issues that a lot of Calgarians are facing, right? Like we want people to not have to go to an outdoor fridge for food, but somewhere with dignity. And so with a group of like 60 volunteers, we built up the space. A landlord basically offered us a building and allowed us to kind of run with our idea. And it was a lot of work, a lot of like elbow grease, definitely not for the faint of heart, but everybody just knew that Calgary needed this. And so now we provide free clothing, food, toiletries to anybody who comes through the door. There's no income requirement and we're self-funded and we basically get clothing from Calgarians like you and me. So people who have stuff in their closets, like don't donate to Value Village, like donate to us. We have a fundraiser side as well that helps us raise money so that we can buy like sandwiches and toiletries. So we're distributing that to over 400 Calgarians. And you'd be surprised at the population that comes in the door. It's not just like you're typically sleeping rough, unhoused individuals. It's like young students, it's families, it's like new immigrants to Calgary, it's the working poor, and it's a lot of seniors. And so this is why I'm so passionate about affordable housing. Like, why can't they afford clothing and food? It's because too much of their budget is going towards housing and medication.
Yeah, so crazy. So Good Neighbor, shout out to Good Neighbor. Take your clothes there rather than to Value Village because Alice is doing amazing things at getting that into the hands of Calgarians who obviously need that support. you started to touch a bit about housing, but even before we go there, you've done so many grassroots initiatives that I feel have kind of like grown to become like initiatives that almost go past you. You kind of ignite a spark and then they turn into something. And so I'm always fascinated by that idea, like your ability to try something and then it almost to go create an ecosystem beyond you. So like, how do you do that? And like, well, what keeps you going? Cause I know for a lot of people, like even for myself, like I know it takes a lot of energy. Yeah. Not everything works. A lot of things fail, but walk me through like how you've been able to kind of start these initiatives and how you've seen them transform into amazing city building initiatives.
Yeah. I think it's because these ideas exist beyond me. Like I feel like I'm just the catalyst or I'm like the connector of people who tell me like issues in the city that they want to resolve. And then I'm connected to like the real estate sector, to the social services sector. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to like create my Avengers team, you know, like my dream team. We're going to like work on it together and everybody has their skill set. I don't micromanage or I try not to. And I just try to like do it as quickly as possible and also allowing for a lot of room for failure and iteration. So we pilot things and sometimes it's amazing. It just works. And sometimes it's like, oh God, how are we going to recover from this big mistake that we made, right? But I think having a team of really passionate individuals and knowing that I'm not personally benefiting from it, it's like really about helping the people who need it and having them inform what it should be like has really helped, because it's just, it's like building a culture of that, right? About change, of innovation, social entrepreneurship, not having to like rely on government funding as much as other nonprofits would have to. So I think that just building that in, like, I grew up in small business family. Like we always just like failure is a part of everything, right? And so kind of letting people know that it's okay if we mess up, like really just makes people take the risk more.
Yeah, yeah. And it's cool. Like, because I think you touched about it. You're in the commercial real estate business. Mm-hmm. You did deal with small businesses. Some of them pay a significant amount per square foot. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to me because you've been on the commercial side of it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of your company and the folks that you work for. I think Jim has done an amazing job as well as cultivating culture and community and giving small businesses opportunities. So walk me through how that works. Like, how do you balance your life of being like, okay, I'm in the non-for-profit space or I'm in the we need to make money and get paid and that's okay space, because you're also building culture on that end.
Yeah, I think it's a continuum, right? Like, I think for me, I just like experimenting and like learning about all things, whether it's like for-profit, non-profit. I think the thing that keeps me at Certus is the fact that we are community-driven and that they do see the importance of supporting people in all different like aspects of business. Like, we're not the type of landlord that's like, we only work with national chains or national covenant, right? Like, we work with mom and pops, we work with first time businesses. When I started in Tiger Said Block is like my favorite place ever. It's
so
like
cool. Yeah.
All people who are like first time business owners, right? And the rents that were given there, because it's an older building, were more affordable. And now they're at a place where they've signed 5-year leases when they were on like month to month before, right? Yeah. And they've like expanded or started other businesses. So that's like really gratifying. And that couldn't happen if like the partners of the company didn't see the value in that, right? Like, we're incubating also these small companies to become larger one day so that they can start other things.
Yeah, I love how you've been able to take like your passion work and transform that into a commercial setting. And for me, that gives me hope, and I'm sure other people hope that you can actually do this. You can do the thing you love and still be profitable and not be ashamed of it. Because I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, well, they're making money. And it's like, no, that's a good thing. Like, you need those small businesses to make money. You need folks like, you know, Certus to make money to be able to deliver like businesses like this.
Yeah.
And so I love that you've been able to kind of figure out how to create a process that works in kind of across the continuum.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's not perfect in any means, but we're still learning. And this isn't something that we've been doing forever, but it's definitely a part of our culture now. And it's something that we're just like really enjoying doing. Like, I think Jim and Ron love being able to give back to the community. Like, we partner so much with like the Calgary Immigrant Women's Association. And it's just like so satisfying to them, like to a level where they're just like, oh, this is so worth it, right? And I think a lot of landlords that I talk to want to do that more. It's just like, I don't have time. I don't have the resources. So connect me with people who want to do that, right? Exactly.
For sure. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, obviously, like, I'm here where you're here at Middle. We're talking about Middle. We're talking about housing. You started to talk about affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like, what are the things that you're hearing? Like, obviously you're dealing with people on the food side of the spectrum. You're touching other, you know, food scarcity, clothing scarcity. What do you, I guess, what have you seen happen in Calgary since you've been back in terms of housing access, affordability, yeah. what you're seeing? Maybe talk a bit about that.
Yeah, it was really interesting coming back to Calgary. I had a condo in Victoria Park and we bought it. And it was like honestly overpriced at the time, but now it's like even more, you know? And what we saw during the pandemic was like a lot of people who maybe lived here from like Vancouver, Toronto, like actually moved back home for a really short period. Like there was like an 8 month period where people were just like vacating. So Mission rents actually went down because there was like more supply, right? And a lot of my friends who were like living outside of the Mission neighborhood were able to like move back into it. And myself, like during the pandemic, I decided I didn't want to live in a condo by myself anymore. And so I moved back in with my parents. And I was like, can't wait to like, yeah, save money for a couple of years and then buy somewhere in the inner city. And I was like right now, like there's not a ton of option for somebody like me. And I'm somebody who's like extremely privileged, you know? And, that's when I was kind of like, okay, what is the housing situation right now? And like, there's like lack of access for like people who need affordable units. Like this is government subsidized units where they pay like a percentage of their income. There's also a lack of supply of like affordable rentals. Cause now, you know, as things get more expensive and more people moved into the city and like demand went up, you know, people just got pushed down the housing spectrum, right? So people like, usually you had like a couple sharing a 2-bedroom unit. Now they're downsizing to a 1-bedroom unit because their rent went up so much. And so then the 1-bedroom unit pushed out the single person who now is like bachelor or basement suite, right? Yeah, or back to their parents.
And the lack of upward mobility is getting constricted.
Yeah. It's just like, cause, and a shortage of supply. Like some people are like, well, I can't afford more, but I can't actually like, there's no choice. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's the two issues right now. And the city put out this like affordable housing task force and put together like a bunch of recommendations. And so there's like a bunch of stuff that we have to do, including
98 recommendations.
Unfortunately, like there's 98 of them because we need all 98 of them. You can't really like cherry pick the things that you want out of it. And so I think right now, like council voted to like approve it with, you know, with further debate or whatever. But I think the rezoning is like a major part of it because you'll look at the letters from like our nonprofit sectors, like they are all working with like low income individuals every day. And they're like, please rezone the city because also it makes it easier for nonprofit housing developers to have more choice too for what they build, right? Right now they're like relegated to kind of like city-owned land to build like apartment buildings or towers, but it also doesn't allow them to have like cheaper projects that they could build faster if like the city was rezoned. So like they could also buy single family home and turn it into a fourplex or like 8 units or, you know, basement suites or whatever. They don't have that option right now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are skeptical. Like is RCG really going to allow for housing capital A affordability? And I think that's something that continues to be talked about. It's like it's put in as one of 98 strategies to support affordability.
Yeah.
What I think I hear you saying is like, this may not be capital A affordable, but it creates an upward mobility and creates general supplies for folks to move into.
We just need more houses. Price aside, like we need places for people to live because there's 60 people moving into the city every day, 22,000 people a year. Like we do not have the supply. And right now Calgary's at the point where I'm like, if I'm on city council, I have the chance right now to be like a leader in housing policy or to like be the ones going back in time. Mm. Right. And so I'm hopeful that our council will be supporting the recommendations and like know that we can work around things like parking. And like, that's like a cultural shift. It's kind of like when people didn't want to wear seatbelts, you know, it's sure. like, and then we did it. People didn't want basement suites and then we did it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like the big boogeyman of policy change, but
you mentioned coming from Edmonton, like they did it and no one seemed to care.
And their housing is like in general, more affordable than ours, right? There's like, it's about spreading out the demand across the city rather than, you know, just making it isolated in a few neighborhoods, right? Like I think there was a podcast with Josh White recently where he was talking about like right now developers are choosing where they know the demand is, like where they can get like the return on their investment. But if you're able to make it like more affordable, not more affordable, but easier to do it across the city, like you would have developers going there too. Like there's hundreds of developers in the city doing this.
Yeah. And the reality is like townhomes will always be cheaper than single family homes or duplexes. Mm-hmm. And currently that's not allowed, nor is there lots to really redevelop in the established neighborhoods. So I guess my question to you is like, What do you say to homeowners that are threat? I think there's two types. Let's talk about the two types.
Okay.
There's people that have been in this community, rooted there for a very long time. They're nervous. They're threatened. their way of life is being challenged. Yeah. So there's a demographic that's been in these communities for 30, 40, 50 years. What would you say to those people who are scared and are not sure how middle housing could service them? One demographic. The second one I want to ask you about, we talked about it off camera. Mm-hmm. The young professional who's like, Alice, I just bought my house for like $1.5 million. My property value is going to go down. Like, where am I going to park? I don't want this many people.
Right.
I understand, like, those are two legitimate concerns, but how would you respond to those
people? I think for the first people who are really established in their neighborhoods and they're worried about how this could change the context of their neighborhood, I would just say, like, if you want your neighborhood to retain the value that it has, like, for instance, in Elbow Park where my parents live, like, people love it because it's close to the river, but it's also close to Mission, this amazing, like, retail shopping food district. Those businesses cannot survive without density. Mm. And also, I'm like, don't you want to live near your kids? Like, I know people who live in Elbow Park and Crescent Heights and Rosedale, and their kids cannot afford to live in these neighborhoods. Like, their kids are buying out in the burbs. And it's like, do you really want to drive on the ring road for 30 minutes to get to your kids, like, to see your grandchildren, stuff like that? And also, it's just like, you got to choose to live here. You should allow other people to as well. Like, you can decide what you want to do with your home. Nobody's forcing you to change anything, but, like, let your neighbor decide as well.
And that's, like, a good point. Like, it's not a forced change. It's an option that's being provided.
Exactly. And for, based on land values of a lot of, like, the higher income neighborhoods, like, honestly, it's going to be very hard pressed for somebody to buy, like, $3 million land to turn into, like, a duplex, right? That's not going to happen. But I think that the change is going to happen regardless. And so just, like, I hope that we can prove that it's going to be better for the city than worse. And I really do think that, but we're both on opposite sides right now. So only time will tell. Mm-hmm. And then for the people who are, you know, buying into neighborhoods for a certain lifestyle and worried about parking and stuff like that, I think that with the investments that the city is making in, like, public transportation and bike lanes and things like that, like, you will eventually see a decrease in car usage. And also, they've seen that with millennials and Gen Zs, like, a lot of them are not buying cars anymore, A, because of the cost, but B, because they're just like, it's easier for me to take the train. It's not like our house doesn't have enough parking anyways. And when it comes to just, like, inner city living, like, I would love to utilize the resources that we've invested into our inner cities with, like, businesses, with, like, infrastructure, parks, and, like, recreation centers and stuff like that. I don't want schools to shut down. Like, totally. You want your kids to have schools to go to? Like, they can't keep open if, like, you only have a below average population level.
It's crazy because most people don't know that we're at like half of peak population in most of these inner city communities. So when they talk about infrastructure capacity, we're not even using it. We're 50% below usage.
Exactly.
And then, like you said, we don't have enough children. There was like seven people living in those houses before. And so that's changed. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess, you know, when I think about middle housing, the thing that I love most about it is, like, it services a wide multi-generational demographic. And so, you know, my hope for those boomers or folks that have been there rooting in those communities is, like, there's no aging in place solutions for those folks.
Because, you know,
building a 4-story or 6-story seniors facility is really tough.
Yeah.
But maybe we can build at-grade accessible units and then have families come back and live with them. And so that is my hope for middle. And I think ultimately, like, you know, maybe you can answer this, but the idea of property rights, it's like you own your property. Isn't it a conservative kind of movement to say, I should get to decide what I want to do with it?
It's like, give us the freedom to do what we want with our properties. And the, you know, housing is a human right that we have to, like, deal with, but, like, parking is not. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you know?
Fair.
Walk the block. Yeah, like, it's not I know that's, like, contentious. I'm lazy. Yeah. I drive and, like, if I have to walk to my car one day, I have to walk to my car one day because the benefits outweigh the cost.
Yeah. And it's funny because you talk about the small businesses that want to be in this community that actually thrive off the density, but then can't succeed because there's not enough people living in these communities. Yeah. And so I know a lot of folks move to the inner city for those amenities. And so you being on the business side is really interesting.
I want my tenants to survive. Like, I want small businesses to thrive, right? Like, it's multi-generational. Like, people have invested so much money into this and it sucks that we don't have the population to support.
Yeah, no, sweet. I super appreciate you being here. If you own a small business, come out April 22nd. It's going to be the largest public hearing, I think, in the city of Calgary. 500 people registered. Yep. Register, come out and speak.
Email your counselors.
Yeah, whichever way you sit on it, just get out and make your voice heard. I think it's really important. But Alice, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Glad we were able to connect. Awesome. Thank you.